Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I'm your host, Paul Gannon. For the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. That's blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. And you can send email messages or messages to the show on Twitter. And you can follow me at GoForItGAN. Make sure you follow me there. Make sure you send me some messages on Twitter at GoForItGAN. And again, while you're there, give me a follow. Big show for you today. Expected to be joined by Detroit Lions linebacker Justin Duran, and Justin's going to talk about the Lions getting into the playoffs for the first time in 12 years, 12 long years if you're a Detroit Lions fan. Also going to be joined by Jarrett Faison, wide receiver for the Indianapolis Colts, and we're going to get his take on this season for the Colts right now. And the Colts, and at this point in the season, everybody's talking Andrew Luck suck for Luck and Peyton Manning, what do they do there, so on and so forth. But we're going to talk to Jared about his season with the Colts this year. And also, we're going to be joined by Finding Bigfoot's Matt Moneymaker, and Finding Bigfoot airs on Animal Planet each and every Sundays at 10 o'clock Eastern and Pacific. And that's going to be airing tomorrow, actually, so on New Year's Day. So Matt Moneymaker will be joining us. And also, one of the stars from the hit movie many, many moons and many years ago, The Sandlot, Marty York, will be stopping by. We're going to talk to him about that movie and about some of the things he has in the works and in store for us in 2012. So make sure you stick around. We got a pretty good show for you lined up here today. And I want to start in the NBA right now, and I want to start more specifically with the Miami Heat. And as we go out through the course of the show, we're going to talk about some of the big stories in 2011. And one of the big stories in 2011 were the Miami Heat, and more specifically LeBron James, and how, you know, he failed miserably in the NBA Finals. I mean, LeBron James was bad in the NBA Finals. There's really no getting around that. He was bad. I mean, and I don't want to say bad. Maybe bad's the wrong word to use, but he didn't come up big when he needed to come up big. And to his credit, LeBron James was great throughout the Eastern Conference playoffs. But as soon as he got to the NBA Finals, as soon as he got to the big stage, and more specifically, as soon as he got into the fourth quarter, LeBron James did not come up big. LeBron James, if LeBron James would have played like LeBron James, the Dallas Mavericks would not be the NBA champions. The Miami Heat would be. And the Miami Heat were clearly to me last year the more talented ball club. They were the more talented team. And you look at it this year, they still are the more talented team. They're more talented than anybody in the NBA. This is one of the best teams in basketball. I think it is the best team in basketball, talent-wise. And I think when it's all said and done, I've been saying it throughout this, the start of this NBA season, I believe this Miami Heat team is getting to the finals, and this Miami Heat team will win the NBA championship this year. I don't think they get denied. With all the talent, and with a year together with each other, I think this team will be better, all the better for that time they spent with each other last year. And now they're bringing it all together this year. And last year, again, they were the most talented team in basketball. They were the most talented team in basketball. It's hard not to be when Wade, Bosh, and LeBron play for you. I mean, if they're on your team, it's kind of hard not to be the best team in basketball. I mean, that's hard not to do. I mean, it's very hard. But you look at it now. You look at this Miami Heat team now. They're off to a 3-0 start, and right now are playing some good basketball and are getting clutch play, something they did not get last season from their you didn't see this from the Miami Heat last season. Those end game situations. The Miami Heat struggled big time in those situations last year. This year, it's been a different story. You had Dwayne Wade, who hit the clutch basket against the Charlotte Bobcats a couple nights ago. And then last night, an alley-oop pass from LeBron James, out of bounds from LeBron James to Dwayne Wade, in another clutch situation. And this year, the Miami Heat in clutch situations are playing a lot better. And it's still early. It's still early. But the Miami Heat look to me like the best team in basketball. They look like, to me, the best team in basketball. And with this talent, it's hard not to be good. It's hard not to be when you have that much talent on your roster. It really is. It's hard not to be good when you have all this talent on this roster. It's just impossible, actually. It truly is impossible not to be good. This is a very good basketball team, and they're showing it. They're showing it thus far in this season. And this is the first week of the NBA season, and it's been great. It's been great to have the NBA back. It's been some good basketball played. A lot of stories out there. And so far, I mean, I talked about the Indiana Pacers, and I want to go over to them right now. This is a ball club that's 3-0. And to me, and I said this, I believe I said this last week before the start of the NBA season, that I view this Indiana Pacers team as a team that's going to surprise some people. I'm not saying they're championship caliber team, but what I'm saying is this is going to be a team that's going to be a lot better than they were last season. They were the eighth seed last season, and they gave Chicago Bulls fits in that series. Gave them fits. But you look at this team now, and with the addition of David West, that was a great signing. That was a great signing, and thus far, it has been paying off. It really has. And David West hit a big shot yesterday to put the game into overtime for the Pacers. And David West is playing David West type of basketball. And you know what you're going to get from David West. He's going to hit that elbow jumper. He's going to do some work on the boards. And he's going to make some big plays for you. And he has. He really has. And you look at it, the Indiana Pacers are a team to me at 3-0. They're taking that next step, I believe. They are taking that next step. And that next step is a higher seed here. That next step is going to be a higher seed for this ball club. And let's be clear about this. The Indiana Pacers are not championship, it's not a championship caliber team. But I will say this about them. They're a team that's going to get a decent seed, I believe, in the playoffs, fifth or fourth type of seed in the playoffs. I really do believe that from this ball club. This team, and you saw them last year, they played hard. They played very hard, and they have pieces. It's not like they don't have pieces. They have pieces, and they played very hard last season under Frank Vogel when he took over for Jim O'Brien, and they took that into the playoffs and gave the Bulls fits. And the reality is they easily could have won that series against the Chicago Bulls. A couple plays here, a couple plays there. And you could say it for any team. But you look at that first game of that series, that was a game where they had the lead for a great portion of the ball game. And then you saw how the Bulls came back down the stretch there. But each and every game the Indiana Pacers were in, each and every game, this is a team, in my mind, that is prepared and that is ready to take that next step. They're ready to take that next step. The Indiana Pacers will be a force in the East. They're not championship caliber, but they will be a force in the East, and they're going to be a tough out for whoever plays them in the playoffs. And, yes, they're only three games in, but they're getting to the playoffs. This is a much better team than they were a year ago. With the addition of David West, that makes them much, much better. And there was at times we were hearing that David West was going to sign with the Celtics. That didn't happen for whatever reason. And ultimately, he ended up in Indiana. The Celtics could have used a David West. They could use a David West, especially with Jeff Green being out for the year with his heart issue. And we wish him nothing but a speedy recovery. But with him out with that heart issue, the Celtics could have used a David West-type player. They really could. They really could. But ultimately, he landed in Indiana and the Pacers. They're a team that can use a David West-type player, and they're using him very well. He's off to a decent start. The Pacers are off to a decent start. And watch out for the Indiana Pacers. And a team right now that you got to start looking at and questioning is the Dallas Mavericks, a team that beat the Toronto Raptors last night, got their first victory of the season. But you look at them now, it's evident that they're missing some things. It's evident that they're missing key pieces to their championship run. Key pieces. They're missing some key pieces in their championship run a year ago. I mean, Tyson Chandler's gone. He was the guy that anchored that defense, did work on in terms of rebounding. J.J. Barea, a guy who came off the bench and did work. I mean, him and Tyson Chandler were one of the big reasons the Mavericks, along with Dirk Nowitzki, of course, but one of the big reasons that the Mavericks won the NBA title. Those guys were big. Those guys were big. And then Deshaun Stevenson, a guy that you're missing, a guy that can hit the three, a guy that can defend, a guy who brought that defensive attitude. He brought that defensive attitude. And you look at the Mavericks right now, they're 25th in rebounds per game, and they're 28th in points allowed. So that to me signals that, you know what, you missed that presence of Tyson Chandler. You miss that presence in Tyson Chandler. He was a presence for the Mavericks a year ago. He was a presence for them in terms of rebounding, in terms of shot blocking. He was big. He brought an attitude. He brought an attitude. And that's the attitude that this team could use. They could use that attitude that he brings. He brings an attitude, a defensive mindset that they could use, that the Dallas Mavericks could use. They could use that. They truly can use what Tyson Chandler brings to the table. And last season, averaged close to 10 boards a game, 9.4 rebounds per game. So he did work there, averaged over a block a game. It was a presence that he brought. He was close to a double-double last season. The Mavericks, you needed Tyson Chandler to win that title. He was big. The Mavericks needed J.J. Barea to win that title. J.J. Barea was big in the NBA Finals and big throughout the course of the season. And also Deshaun Stevenson, like I said before, a guy that hit the three, a guy that didn't mind playing defense, didn't mind getting dirty. The team is not, they don't have that grittiness that they had a year ago. They were a gritty team. They were a gritty team. They epitomized a team in a lot of ways. Of course, Dirk had a great year, but alongside Dirk, you had the Deshaun Stevensons, the J.J. Barea's, the Tyson Chandlers. And Caron Butler, before he went down, he was big for them. Before he went down, he was the second leading scorer for the team. But they found ways to replace him. But he was big, too, before he went down. So all these pieces that they had in Dallas were big. They were big. And to me, it made – they were a team. They were a team. And it was the notion of a team when you talk about the Dallas Mavericks. And maybe, you know, you bring in a Lamar Odom, you bring in a Vince Carter. Of course, you still have Jason the Jet Terry. Maybe if you look at it over time, this roster can get – can get that chemistry, develop that chemistry that they had a year ago. Of course, Sean Marion as well. Maybe they can get that chemistry that they had a year ago and make a run. There's still talent on this ball club. Lamar Odom is a very talented, very versatile player. Dirk Nowitzki, obviously, some may say he was the real MVP of last season. Jason Kidd is a little older, and it's been talked that the Mavericks are essentially lining up and preparing for 2012 and the 2012 free agency period, where a Deron Williams may be available, where a Dwight Howard may be available. And you look at a Deron Williams, he's from Dallas. So that could be a logical place for him to go. But the talented Mavericks team that they were last season is not the talented Mavericks team that they are this season. And they're still talented. They are still talented, but they don't have the same type of cohesion that they had a year ago. And that may take time. They don't seem to have that same type of chemistry that they had a year ago. But again, that may happen over time. But when you have guys, again, like a Lamar Odom, Vince Carter, if he's right, is still a player that can still score the basketball. But you're not going to get that same type of defensive presence that you got when you had a Deshaun Stevenson. Delonte West is a guy that still, in my mind, is underrated in a lot of ways. If his head is all right, he can give you a defensive presence, and he can also hit big-time shots. So the Dallas Mavericks off to a slow start. We'll see if they can turn this thing around. There is talent there to turn this thing around, but we shall see if they do turn this thing around. And you look at this Mavericks team, and you have to say they are one of the bigger stories of 2011. I mean, the Dallas Mavericks were a team to me. Again, they epitomized team. While you had the Miami Heat, a collection of very talented players, the Mavericks seemed like a cohesive team. They seemed like a team. I mean, they went through the Lakers, swept the Lakers. They beat up on a young Oklahoma City team. And ultimately, they got to the NBA Finals, and they won and beat the Miami Heat. And this was a team that they would never say die. I mean, they had a big comeback against Oklahoma City in the Western Conference Finals. And if they even go to the NBA Finals, where they had a big comeback in Game 2. And if you look at that Game 2, Game 2 to me of the 2011 NBA Finals was the biggest game. That was the biggest moment there, where you had the Miami Heat in complete control in that particular ball game. I believe they were up 15 in the fourth quarter. They were in complete control. You had Dwayne Wade hit that three. He struck the post. And the Miami Heat were in complete control then. And then the Dallas Mavericks, like they had throughout the season and like they done throughout those playoffs, made a comeback. They showed heart. They battled. They fought hard. And ultimately, in doing so, they were able to win that game, and ultimately win the NBA Finals. They were able to do that because of heart. 2011, Dallas Mavericks were about heart. They fought, and they were a team. They were a team. They were a collection of players who came together and were a team. They were a team, and Dirk was not going to be denied. He was not going to be denied. He wasn't. And that ball club, Jason Terry, the guy got the NBA Finals trophy tattooed on his arm before the season. He wasn't going to be denied. He was not going to be denied. And the Dallas Mavericks, a team that showed heart, that showed grit, that showed toughness, were the 2011 NBA champions. And that is another, that's one of the bigger stories in 2011, one of the bigger sports stories in 2011, the Dallas Mavericks and how they came together. And I talked about the Miami Heat and them not winning, LeBron James coming up small in the NBA Finals. That was a big story as well. That was a big story as well. And to me, that NBA Finals and last year's NBA season, it was a great year for the NBA. The lockout kind of hurt some things early on. It kind of hurt the momentum. But I feel like it's coming back. It's coming back together. And there were concerns that maybe they would cancel the year, but they didn't. It came back together. And speaking of lockouts, 2011 was the year of the lockouts. You had the NBA lockout. You had the NFL lockout. And in both of those situations, you look at the NFL lockout. I said this throughout that whole lockout, throughout the whole 2011, that no games would be missed. No games would be missed. You knew it. I mean, because the NBA, the NFL really did not have any true problems. The NFL, it's the NFL and then every other league. It's the NFL first and then baseball or NBA third or fourth. I mean, the NFL is head and shoulders above anything right now. Fantasy football. Suicide pools. The NFL is big. The Super Bowl, which is essentially a national holiday. But the NFL had some issues. The owners wanted a little more. The players wanted to keep everything the same. The owners wanted a little more. Ultimately, worked it out. And ultimately, the lockout did not cause any games to be missed. And you knew. And I said it over and over. I know there's a lot of people concerned that the lockout would claim games and claim a good portion of the season. No. No way. It wasn't going to happen. The NFL is not stupid. The owners aren't stupid. The players aren't stupid. And they were able to get it done. And the two things that you look at when you have the NBA lockout, the NFL lockout. One of the good things that kind of came out of it, not only was there labor peace for a long time in those two sports, but also it was fun when the NFL and the NBA lockouts ended because it was like a mad dash to sign free agents, a mad dash to release players, a mad dash to make trades, so on and so forth. That was an exciting part of the lockout ending. It was very exciting. The Eagles signed a whole bunch of players there. I mean, the free agency, it was just crazy. Left and right deals were being made, and they were being made in such a short time frame. It was being made in such a short time frame, in such a short time span. I mean, it was just quick. Boom. Nnamdi Asomugh with the Eagles. Boom. Jason Babin signs with the Eagles. I mean, free agency, it was just crazy how players were just going here, left and right, just was just so fast and so quick. But it was so beautiful and so exciting and so interesting to see. It was enjoyable. It was enjoyable to see that. I loved it. I'm not going to sit here and lie. I loved it. And that, to me, that was one of the beautiful things that came out of the lockout. Just the quick signings and it was almost like a gangbang. It was just boom, let's do it. Sign here, boom, sign there, boom, sign there. Visit here, visit this city, that city, boom, boom, boom. And it was just an exciting time in the NFL. It was an exciting time to be a fan of the NFL. It was an exciting time. In the NBA, games were lost. Games were lost, unfortunately. 16 to be exact. The whole preseason was wiped out as well. But the preseason is not the whole preseason, but they got in a couple games. But it was a very, very small and short preseason for the NBA. But the thing is, you look at it, how important is the preseason anyway in a lot of ways? I mean, how many people are watching the preseason? So, I mean, to me, it wasn't that big of a deal. But the NBA, my concern was that they would just wipe out the whole season. That was my concern. But ultimately, they got it in. The union was close to decertifying. They got into courts, and they ultimately got it taken care of. But I was a little scared there that the season would completely be canceled. And if the season was canceled, it would have set back the league. It would have set the league back a lot. Now, I mean, you're not really hearing much backlash, much I hate the NBA type talk. And you look at the ratings on Christmas Day, they were up. So, I mean, that kind of supports that. And, you know, and I said this throughout the course of 2011 when talking about the NFL lockout and when talking about the NBA lockout. You knew you would have fans talking tough and tough talkers, beer muscles, if you will. The tough talkers saying, oh, I'm not going back to watch another NBA game. These guys make too much money. They make me sick. They can't even get this whole thing right. They're fighting over billions of dollars, so on and so forth. You heard the same thing with the NFL. Oh, these guys make me sick. They make all this money. They make this and that, and they can't even get that right. I mean, come on. It was just tough talk. Because the reality is, all those people who were talking tough, who are talking tough and acting tough, are back watching games at NFL stadiums, back watching games at NBA arenas, back watching NFL games on Sunday, back watching NBA games. And they watched on Christmas when the league started. A lot of them watched it. A lot of them watched it. A lot of fans are watching again. And it's great. It's great. It's absolutely great. But 2011 was the year of the lockout. But one of the good things that come from that is there is labor peace in those two sports for many, many years to come. And also, one of the good things that came from that was the enjoyable free agency period in both leagues. More so in the NFL than the NBA, but it was an enjoyable time. It was an enjoyable time. So you look at it now, again, labor peace in both sports. But that was a big part of 2011, the year of the lockout, the year of the lockout. And that was a big story in 2011. But ultimately, like I said, both owners and both players got together and cleared this whole thing up. There's labor peace in all the sports right now. Baseball re-upped their deal as well. So everything is great. Everything is great in terms of the business side of sports. And unfortunately, we had to hear a lot about the business side of sports. A little too much that I think we all wanted to hear. BRI, basketball-related income. We had to hear a lot about that, something that we did not want to hear about. We did not want to hear about those type of things. Who cares? Percentages. Who makes this? Who makes that? I mean, no one really wants to hear that kind of stuff. That's boring. You don't watch sports to talk about those type of things. That stuff to me is boring. That stuff to me is just not enjoyable. It's not enjoyable. It's just not enjoyable, and it's not something I want to watch, talk, or hear about. I don't want to hear about that. And I don't think anybody wants to hear about that. No, and no one wants to hear about that. I don't know anybody that wants to hear about that mess. No one wants to hear about that junk. I know I don't. I know that I won't. I don't and won't and don't want to ever hear it again. I don't want to ever hear it again. And speaking of something that a lot of people are tired of hearing, but we're hearing a lot about it, is Peyton Manning and his whole situation. That was one of the big stories of 2011 as well. That was another big story in 2011. And Peyton Manning, his situation with his neck, I mean, the guy's had a bunch of neck surgeries in such a short time period. His streak of starts was snapped at 227. And the reality was, I mean, there was talk that possibly he could come back. But the reality was, we all knew that Peyton Manning was pretty much going to be out for the season. And then you have the situation now with the Colts as we conclude 2011 and go into 2012. The Colts, they have a decision to make. They have to think about some things now. In terms of Peyton Manning, he's expected. He has a bonus, a roster bonus. They're an option, $28 million. $28 million. This is due in March. And you look at it. You look at it. What happens here? How do the Colts take care of this situation? More than likely, the Colts probably will be and probably will get the number one pick next season, and that's probably going to be Andrew Luck. But then you have the decision to make, what do you do with Peyton Manning? I think you keep both. I think you keep both. And I think you try to come up with some kind of solution. Maybe Peyton Manning restructures his deal. Maybe you can do something. But you have to do it. You got to draft Andrew Luck if he's there. And you got to figure out what you're going to do with Peyton Manning. I think I would keep both. See what you got, Peyton Manning, because you never know with a rookie. Yes, Andrew Luck is can't miss in a lot of ways. But, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of people were can't miss. And a lot of people have failed. It's just the nature of the game, nature of the business. And quarterback's one of the harder positions in sports. So we don't know what Andrew Luck is going to be. And truthfully, we don't know what Peyton Manning is going to be. But we talked about it a lot on Wednesday. One thing you know about Peyton Manning, and all we can go on is the last time we saw him. And the last time we saw Peyton Manning, he was 33 touchdowns, 4,700 yards passing, and the Colts were winning. Peyton Manning was getting it done. Peyton Manning was getting it done for the Colts. He was still getting it done. And if he's healthy, obviously he can still play at a high level, if he's healthy. The talent is there. The ability is there. Obviously he's a little older. He's getting older. He'll be 36 years old in 2012. So it's going to be interesting to see how that situation plays out. I'm very interested to see how this thing plays out. But Peyton Manning is the Colts. He is that organization. And to me, with him being the organization, it's going to be hard to divorce him at this time. And so I think, and plus you don't want to see Peyton Manning in another jersey. You don't want to see Peyton Manning in a Jets jersey. You don't want to see Peyton Manning in any other jersey but the Indianapolis Colts, if you're the Colts franchise. So this is a decision they have to make. A very interesting decision they have to make. And I don't want to be Jim Irsay or Bill Polian. I don't want to be any of those guys. I don't want to have to make that decision. But I think if I was and had to make that decision, to me, I would have to stick with Peyton, maybe find a way to restructure the deal, and draft Andrew Luck. That's what I would do. But again, there's no guarantee. They could win tomorrow, and so it could just throw this all out a window at this point. And then the Rams are in a situation. They have to think about, what do they do? Do they stick with Sam Bradford? Sam Bradford, a guy who showed a lot last season, a guy who played some decent football for the St. Louis Rams last season and got them close to a division title. So the Rams have a decision to make. What do they do? What do they do if they get the number one pick? Do they trade the pick and try to get a boatload of talent and stock that roster to go along with Sam Bradford? Or do they say, you know what, and Sam Bradford is owed a lot of money too, but do they say at this point, you know what, let's decide, let's move on from Bradford and go with a can't-miss prospect and Andrew Luck, and see what happens. And see what happens. And you're looking at the Rams and Steve Spagnuolo, the coach for the Rams, he may not be back next year. Spags may be losing his job. So you have to look at it, you got to look at that as well. Does a new coach want a new quarterback? Does a new coach want a new quarterback? And that's something you have to look at. We have to look at that too. Because we don't know. I mean, the Colts can win tomorrow, and you never know what happens from there. But it's going to be interesting to see what the Colts do. And if the Rams get the number one pick, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. Do they go with Bradford? Do they keep Bradford, trade the number one pick, try to restock the franchise? Or do you draft Andrew Luck? So we shall see what happens there and decide and see what happens with the Rams and what they decide to do if they were to get the number one pick. We shall see what happens there. But it should be interesting. You know, tomorrow in the NFL is going to be an interesting day. It's going to be a great day of football, a lot of games with a lot of meaning. A lot of games with a lot of meaning. I mean, even you know, the Rams and Colts games, I should say, on some level, have meaning. They have meaning for other reasons, but they have meaning. So the games tomorrow are going to be very interesting. It's going to tell us a lot and show us a lot. You look at, I mean, the storylines in Denver, the storylines in Indianapolis, the storylines with the Giants and Cowboys. I mean, storylines there, I mean, it's a whole bunch of games that have a lot of meaning, significant meaning. So these games have meaning, and it's great. The season ends with a lot of important games, a lot of good watches, Looking forward to it. I'm truly looking forward to tomorrow. I mean, it's going to be some interesting football tomorrow. Ravens-Bengals has big-time meaning. Ravens are fighting for the division in the number two seed, and the Bengals are fighting to get into the playoffs as a wild card. A game that has a lot of meaning. Steelers-Browns. Steelers fighting for the division title in that number two seed. So that's big. The Steelers need that game. Does Big Ben play? We shall see with that. You look at it in terms of course, Dallas and New York, Cowboys, Giants. That's a big game there. That's a big game there. Big time game. Big game. And that's a winner take all type of situation. Winner take all. You win the NFC East. You lose, you go home. You go home. So that's a big time game there. That's a big time game. Winning, you're in. Losing, you go home. You go home to mama. Chiefs, Broncos, Chargers, Raiders. Two big games there. Broncos win, they win the division. Point blank. They win the division. They win the division. They lose, and the Raiders win. Raiders win the division. Win the division. I mean, it's kind of that simple. It's really truly that simple. So I mean, these are a lot of big storylines in the NFL tomorrow. A lot of big time storylines, and a lot of things we're looking out for tomorrow in the NFL. Kyle Orton, does he go back to Denver and stick it to the fan base, stick it to Tebow, and stick it to everybody in Denver? Does he do it? Does he do it with the Chiefs? Or does Tebow come up big in his ball game, continues this magical run? I mean, Tim Tebow is one of the big storylines in 2011. I mean, his magic. He's coming out of nowhere, essentially. He came out of nowhere. Absolutely nowhere. Absolutely nowhere he came out of. Tim Tebow. Absolutely amazing. A guy that many believe is not an NFL quarterback. A guy that many believe it's just some believe he's not an NFL quarterback. Some believe that he still is an NFL quarterback and that he has a lot of potential and that he's an absolute winner. All he does is win, 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 win. And that's really, truly what he has been doing, a lot of winning. And his Broncos were left for dead before Tim Tebow stepped on the scene. They were left for dead. They were on life support, basically. And then Tebow... And the rest of the team is the defense, of course. I don't want to neglect that. The running game, of course. I don't want to neglect that. But all those factors there, the run game, the defense, those two things, and, of course, Tebow. But the running game and the defense were to me, bigger. Or if not bigger, the same amount. If they done the same, I mean, if – Percentage-wise, if you want to say Tebow 50, I would give Tebow 50, and I would give the defense and the run game, and even the special teams, I would give that 50, maybe even a little more. Because the reality is, yes, Tebow has made some plays, but the reality is the defense has kept him in a lot of games so he could make those plays, so he could Tebow a team, if you will. But for whatever reason, teams are Tebowing him, if you will, at this point. And not for whatever reason. The reason is I'm still not sold on Tim Tebow as an NFL quarterback. I don't believe. I do not believe. Quarterbacks are supposed to be able to throw the ball. Tim Tebow has not proven. He really hasn't proven that he can do that on a consistent basis. You see flashes, but you also see flashes of him not being able to throw the football consistently. I don't believe in Tebow. I do not believe. And I believe And right now, the Denver Broncos will lose tomorrow. I believe the Kansas City Chiefs will win that game. And if the Raiders can handle their business, maybe all this Tebow talk goes away. And then you have to think about what happens now with John Elway if the Broncos do lose and don't get into the playoffs. Do you continue this ride with Tebow? Do you continue this Tebow ride? Or do you, at this point, end this ride? Do you end this ride? I mean, so that's something we have to think about and see as we continue throughout this season. We shall see as we continue. Let's bring in, we're going to bring in now one of the guys from Finding Bigfoot on the Animal Planet, and we're going to talk to him in a couple minutes. And interesting show there. I mean, Finding Bigfoot, I guess it's like chasing a waterfall, as TLC would say. I mean, it's something interesting. It's an interesting thing, and, you know, I mean, Matt Moneymaker, who's going to be joining us, believes that Bigfoot is out there. He said he's had encounters with Bigfoot. So we're going to talk to Matt, and we're going to bring Matt in now, actually. Let's bring in now one of the stars of Finding Bigfoot on Animal Planet, Matt Moneymaker. Matt, how are you, sir?
Very good.
And
how
Matt,
you doing?
I'm doing well, sir, doing very well. And I'm looking at your bio. You come from a family of lawyers. You're a lawyer yourself. But how does a lawyer go about chasing Bigfoot? How did this all happen?
I was interested in the Patterson footage and just the whole mystery when I was young. And then I went looking for a book on the subject when I was a teenager. And I was in college, and I was 19, and went into a bookstore in L.A., and the guy who worked there said he knew a couple of people who had seen them up in the Ventura County Mountains. And I was just so intrigued by that because I had always thought it was like in a far northwest sort of place, and I was way down in L.A. But when they said the Ventura County Mountains, I was just like, I have to go. If there's even a little chance that there's some up there, I have to go check it out. And it was, you know, a few months later, I had found somebody who could backpack. I didn't know how to backpack at that point. And he taught me how to do that. And we went up there and we found tracks, like fresh tracks. And then we heard them. And after that point, I was just, I was obsessed. And so I went through the rest of UCLA and then the rest of law school knowing that I was going to be doing this. This was the thing I was going to do. So, you know, when I got out, I went, instead of, you know, working at a law firm, I went, you know, did internet stuff because I knew internet was the key to being able to bring in, you know, more information from witnesses. And it has definitely proved to be so.
And have you had any type of encounters with Bigfoot? Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've had one about 15 feet away from me growling at me. And I've had them probably within 50 feet a number of times. At night, within 50 feet. But the closest one was definitely this time in eastern Ohio in 94. And the thing just stood there and growled, came up out of the tree line. It's a long story how we got to that point. A bunch of farmers had, you know, I had put out bumper stickers and flyers and classified ads in newspapers, and I would get calls from people who lived out in the woods and farmers. You know, some of them were Mennonite farmers. And just charted those and figured out a place where they were probably coming out of a certain wildlife refuge. And I went in there to figure out where to set up surveillance cameras. And it was that night recon mission that where one came up and did that.
And you're sure it was Bigfoot?
Well, it's not Bigfoot. I mean, there's more than one. It was definitely a Bigfoot. And there was actually two Bigfoots there, a male and a female. The other guy, they had both charged at him, but he shined his flashlight on both of them, and he said he definitely got the impression it was a male and a female. But nevertheless, the people mistakenly assume that we're chasing after this one kind of mystery phantom, and you know that's popping up here and there. But no, there's Bigfoots in Oklahoma, there's Bigfoots in New York State, and in California, and they're all different Bigfoots.
And what would you say to someone out there who's a little skeptical and says this whole thing is crazy?
I would say that it's understandable that they would think that if they were just basing it off of, like, modern media and, you know, the representations of Bigfoots that they see in commercials and stuff like that. It seems like kind of a silly, mythical figure. And I would say, you know, just start looking into it and you'll realize that kind of mythical figure Bigfoot is based on the fact that people see animals like this a lot of places, and when they do, they call that thing Bigfoot because it looks like what they imagined Bigfoot looks like.
Right.
Not exactly, but it's close enough that they say that's Bigfoot, and they all, you know, very often they, you know, that's the word they use, but even then they don't often, you know, some think that they're seeing the one and only Bigfoot, but when I think a lot of them, when they finally see one, they realize, no, it's just a flesh and blood animal. It'd be like bears or mountain lions or anything else, and they live out there, and they always have.
Now, describe what a Bigfoot looks like.
Well, from a distance, you would see a big, hairy, silhouetted figure. You could see some of the representations. If you go to the BFRO site, we actually have, you know, a clip of the Patterson footage and some really good eyewitness sketches. But if you were to take, I guess the best way to describe it, it's the face. It's when you see the face, you realize they're definitely not human. But if you were to take, like, say, a gibbon and supersize the gibbon and then give that steroids, then you'd end up with, like, something that looks like the face of a Sasquatch. Yeah, they definitely don't look human in the face.
Okay. We're talking to one of the stars of Finding Bigfoot, Matt Moneymaker. Finding Bigfoot stars, not stars, but airs on Animal Planet Sundays, 10 o'clock Eastern and Pacific. And Matt, you talked about the organization, Bigfoot Field Research Organization. Talk about this organization. Exactly what do you guys do?
The group started in 1995, and originally it was just, there was Bigfooters, I shouldn't say a lot, there was probably a two dozen or so people in the U.S. and Canada that really followed this subject closely, you know, back from the 60s and into the 70s and 80s. And those people corresponded by phone or, you know, by letters, et cetera. And then when the Internet came along, they heard about that there was this thing called the Internet Virtual Bigfoot Conference. And that's what got a lot of the Bigfooters actually to get online so they could use this. It was a mailing list. But they could start sharing information during the mailing list. Well, it was great for a while. And then as more people started coming on, it started getting a lot more difficult to manage that whole thing. So we formed the BFRO so we could control just the communications coming through. And then since then, it's become an organization where we organize expeditions in different parts of the country, and we've just been taking in a lot of witness information for a long time. And that is formed. We put that on the website, and people get to see where the sightings occur.
Wow.
And so it's a big operation now.
Yeah, definitely. And Finding Bigfoot, like I said, airs on Animal Planet this Sunday, 10 o'clock Eastern and Pacific. Tell us, what can we expect with this show? What are we going to see?
You're going to see some footage, very interesting footage from different places. We definitely got close enough to get some recordings at a couple of the places we went to. And more than anything else, you'll see that there's a lot of places in this country where there's a lot of witnesses who've never come forward. And you'll see them. They'll, like, be at the town hall meetings, and they'll come and they'll tell their stories. And these aren't just, like, you know, kids looking for something fun to do. No, these are the sort of people you know you can believe. And, you know, after you hear enough of them and they're describing the same thing and they're describing such, you know, just animal behavior, and there's a geographic consistency to it, you know, that they all tend, they're not all crazy, and they're all actually corroborating each other.
Okay.
And it's very impressive. So just the witnesses themselves are worth, you know, watching for season two.
And Matt, if I were to see Bigfoot tomorrow, should I be scared? Should I run?
No, you wouldn't need to run. And unless they're throwing things at you, they're not going to hurt you. They have had many opportunities over the years to hurt people, and they just don't do that. But they'll try to get you to leave. So you just kind of follow their lead. If they're obviously trying to scare you out of the area, then get out of there. But if they're just checking you out, then that's an invitation for you to just stand there and check them out.
I think if I saw one, I don't know if I would check it out. I think I would run.
Well, that's what most people do. And
okay.
And that's why when people say, how come nobody's got a photo or captured one, et cetera, well, you know, most people turn and run. That's part
and
of the
I
reason.
Think that would be the wise thing to do.
Well, you remember, you could get injured also if you're running away in terror and fright. The injuries that we've had on trips were for people running in the dark and getting a stick in the eye, you know, which has happened a couple of times.
Wow.
But the Bigfoots, nobody's ever gotten injured from a Bigfoot.
Matt, it was a pleasure talking to you, sir. And again, everybody, make sure you check out Finding Bigfoot, Arizona Animal Planet, each and every Sunday, 10 o'clock Eastern and Pacific on Animal Planet. Matt, it was a pleasure talking to you, sir. Good luck with the show.
All righty. Thank you.
Take care. Matt Moneymaker, Finding Bigfoot. Very interesting. I mean, that's all you really can say. It's just interesting to see how that thing plays out. I mean, do I think there's a Bigfoot? I have my doubts. I mean, I have my doubts about the whole species, if you will. But, I mean, maybe those doubts will be answered once I watch, Finding Bigfoot on Animal Planet each and every Sunday, 10 o'clock Eastern and Pacific. And it was a pleasure talking to Matt Moneymaker. And if he finds Bigfoot, or the Bigfoots, if you will, that will be a moneymaker for Matt, truly. Because a lot of people are really, really interested in this Bigfoot phenomenon. And it's been and something, I mean, you've heard about it a lot, especially I've heard a lot about it as a kid. You know, people, I found Bigfoot, I've seen Bigfoot here, I've seen Bigfoot, or a Bigfoot, if you will, here, a Bigfoot there, so on and so forth. But, I mean, interesting. Just interesting is all I can say. And again, I have my doubts, and I'm sure a lot of you out here have your doubts. It's interesting. It's just an interesting phenomenon, and people are chasing them. People are chasing and looking for the Bigfoot or a Bigfoot, if you will, and we shall see. But make sure you check it out. Finding Bigfoot, Animal Planet, each and every Sunday, 10 o'clock Eastern and Pacific. So check it out. I mean, the least you can say, it may be interesting. I mean, if you believe or don't believe, at least you'll be interested. I mean, at least you'll be entertained. At least you will be entertained. And that's the important part, I guess, at the end of the day, entertainment. That's why we watch the things that we watch, to be entertained. And speaking of entertainment, the Detroit Lions are back in the playoffs for the first time in 12 years. It's a resurgence in Detroit, and Detroit's a good city. Detroit is a good city, and it's good to see winning football in Detroit again. I mean, that's a good thing to see. That's definitely a good thing to see, an exciting thing to see, winning football in Detroit. And there is a resurgence in Detroit, and they're going to be good with Matthew Stafford, with Calvin Johnson, and those boys, and Dominican Sue. They're going to be good for a while. There are pieces there for the Detroit Lions to be good. And I don't think this year is their year in terms of winning a championship, but I think this year is a start of something that could be very good in Detroit. And if you're a Lions fan, you got to be very excited. You got to be very happy about what's going on in Detroit. You got to be very happy about what's going on in Detroit. It's an exciting time to be a Lions fan right now. And they're in the playoffs, first time in 12 years, and they have an opportunity. They have an opportunity to get the fifth seed, and if they get that fifth seed, they can avoid playing either San Francisco or New Orleans. And that would be two tough games. And actually, San Francisco would not be as tough as New Orleans, I would think. I mean, they're a team that played San Francisco earlier in the season. San Francisco went to Detroit and beat the Lions. But if the Lions and the Niners meet again, I think I would go with the Lions there. But if the Lions were to face the Saints again, I don't think that would be a favorable matchup for them. I really don't. So if they can get that fifth seed They avoid playing the third seed, which would be either San Francisco or the New Orleans Saints, and ultimately avoiding that, they would either play the Giants or Cowboys, which would be a much easier matchup for them, a much easier matchup if they can get that fifth seed. And that's big, but if they don't. And tomorrow's a big game against the Packers and the Packers. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers may not play a lot, and a lot of the starters may not play a lot. But it's not big for the Packers, but it's very big for the Lions. And if you're the Lions, again, you want to avoid having to go to either San Francisco or New Orleans, and mainly New Orleans, I would think, more so than San Francisco. So I think tomorrow is a big game for them. And we're going to be talking to Justin Durant of the Detroit Lions, as the Detroit Lions are in the playoffs for the first time. The first time in 12 years. 12 long years if you're a Detroit Lions fan. 12 long years. Let's bring in now linebacker for the Detroit Lions, Justin Durant. Justin, how are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, man. How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
And Justin, with the playoffs on the line last weekend, you guys came out with a purpose. Talk about your team's performance last Sunday against the Chargers.
Oh, man, you know, the Chargers were very hot coming into last week. You know, I think they had won 3 games straight. You know, and it was a win-and-get-in situation for us, you know. So both of our backs were basically against the wall, you know. But the coaches put together a great game plan, and we went out and executed and had the best game of our season.
And, Justin, you had a pretty good game yourself. You had 11 tackles, and you were all over the field. Talk about your performance.
Man, you know, it was just it was a good game for me, man. You know, I felt good out there. Felt like I was kind of in the zone. You know, just recognizing certain things that I've seen on tape, you know, all week, and the coaches making the right calls and putting us all in the situations to make plays, you know. And I just took advantage of it when it came my way.
And Justin, this is the first time that the Lions are making the playoffs in 12 years. This is a city that is pretty starved for a winner. Did you sense that when you signed here over the summer?
Yeah, most definitely. You know, I know it's a really historic franchise, you know, and I wanted to play a part in that. You know, it had been a while since they had been to the playoffs, like I said, I think 1999. And, you know, I just want to be a part of the resurgence of the Detroit Lions. And, you know, I'm just happy to be a part of the team that brought the city the first playoff berth since 1999.
And after the game, many of the players went around slapping hands with the fans. Describe the atmosphere at Ford Field after the ball game.
Man, it was electric, man. You know, all the fans just nobody really left, man. Everybody was trying to come down, you know, and shake hands with all of us, just because, you know, they showed their appreciation for what we had done, man. You know, it's really kind of hard to describe. You know, you could kind of just feel it in the air. You know, the love and everything that the city was feeling for us at the time.
And when you signed with this ball club in the offseason, a lot of people talked about their potential. Did you see them making it to the playoffs this year?
Most definitely. You know, that was one of the main reasons that I signed here. You know, I saw the potential that they had. I saw the, you know, the young core players that they had, and also the, you know, the veterans, you know, that that could kind of mold the team into, you know, a winner that we are right now. So that was, you know, really a major part of me making the decision to come up here.
We're talking to Detroit Lions linebacker Justin Durant. And, Justin, this week you guys traveled to Green Bay to play the Packers. This game means basically nothing for the Packers, but means a lot to you guys as you're battling for the fifth seed. How important is the fifth seed for you guys?
It's very important, you know, and not just it being a fifth seed. It's just, you know, we're playing very good football right now. You know, we won 3 in a row. Like I said, we put together our best game last week, and we just want to continue to build, you know, build momentum going into the playoffs.
And you guys are building a momentum. You got off to a great start, 5-0, and now you're on a 3-game winning streak here down the stretch. Do you feel like you're playing your best football of the season?
Yeah, I think so. You know, these past couple weeks, you know, I've been playing pretty well. You know, I was hurt for a little while in there, then I kind of tweaked my hamstring a little bit. And, you know, I'm just getting back up to full speed. And, you know, I've been putting together some pretty good games these past few weeks. So I think I'm trying to just continue to get better, man, continue to work. And, you know, me and my teammates, you know, we're just trying to put together our best games each week.
And the Detroit Lions, they've had some issues with personal fouls. You guys lead the league in this category. Why do you think that was the case?
Just that we just had to be more disciplined. You know, we got a young team, but at the same time, you know, we can't use that as an excuse. You know, guys just have to play smarter. We all have to play smarter, you know, and realize, you know, that certain things that we do, you know, other teams may do it, you know, to kind of provoke us, to try to get us to retaliate. But, you know, we have to be smarter than that. And we're trying to minimalize that, and we've been doing that over the past couple games.
And Ndamukong Suh, a guy who was suspended 2 games for his issue with the Green Bay Packers a few weeks back. Did you get the sense that he's learned a lot from this suspension?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I know it really hurt him, you know, to not to be able to play in those couple games. You know, he was really kind of down a little bit, but he's coming back up, man. You know, he got past it. We've all moved past it, and we're on to this playoff run.
We're talking to Detroit Lions linebacker Justin Duran. And, Justin, you talked about some of the injuries, and you were out 3 weeks with a concussion. With all the things that we're hearing now about concussions, how scary was that experience for you?
It's kind of, I wouldn't necessarily say scary, but, you know, it's a weird feeling. You know, the brain is something, you know, that's so sensitive, you know, you can't really, you know, play around with it. You know, it's been a major thing that's been going on in the league over these past few years to try to, you know, ensure player safety. And, you know, but it's hard being on the side and, you know, wanting to play, but realizing that, you know, your health and your safety is first. So it was a tough situation for me, but I've gotten past it, and I'm back to rolling right now.
And how long did it really take for you to get back to yourself?
It took a couple weeks. You know, once you kind of have it, you don't really, you think you're yourself, but you're really not. And you kind of, you know, once you basically you really get over it, you realize that you really weren't, you know, healthy as you thought you were.
Right. And Justin, Christmas just passed. What did Justin Duran get for Christmas?
What did I get for Christmas? I got a couple gifts from my girlfriend. She gave me a couple shirts, just some clothes and stuff like that. I really don't get a lot of Christmas gifts, you know. and it's understandable. You know, I just try to, you know, to give out to my family and, you know, help them with different things. And, you know, I'm not really, you know, I don't complain about anything like that, man. It's, you know, it comes with the territory, man, and the situation that I'm in. I have the ability to give more, you know, than a lot of people do. So I don't really sit back and wait on gifts, even though I appreciate them. But, you know, it's no big deal, man. You know, I'm just happy that I'm in the situation I'm in.
And the new year's coming around. Do you have a resolution?
I really haven't gotten one. I just want to continue to keep God first, remain humble, and continue to work hard at everything that I do.
And that's a great thing. That's a great resolution. I was reading somewhere that you do a little DJing. Talk about that.
I'm trying to start, man. I can't really sit there and say I'm a DJ. You know, I'm just really getting some equipment and stuff like that. You know, I think I'm a music programmer, basically. You know, I can, you know, I've like played a couple house parties and stuff like that. But I'm trying to learn in this off season, you know, really get all the technicalities down of the art of DJing. You know, it's something that interests me. I've always been interested in it for as long as I can remember. So I'm trying to really get it down in this off season and really learn how to do it.
And now, do you have a DJ stage name? Maybe a DJ Clue, like a Funkmaster Flex. You got a name?
Not yet, man. I'm trying to think of something. You know, I don't want to have anything that's whack, you know, as a name. So I'm trying to come up with something kind of clever, you know, as we speak.
How about DJ JD52?
I've thought about DJ JD, but that's kind of, I don't know. I gotta get some feedback on it, you know, and see what the people think.
You need to put it out there on the Twitter page.
Yeah, I see what it is. I might need to do that and get some suggestions from people.
And where can fans connect with you?
And get at me on Twitter. It's at JDurant52. come
fans,
and talk to
make
me.
Sure
you know,
you
I talk to everybody. I try my best to reply to all questions, you know, and people just want to talk, man. I'm a, you know, real open guy.
Everybody, go to Twitter and make sure you follow JDurant52. That's my man Justin Durant here from the Detroit Lions. And Justin, as we said, you guys are in the playoffs right now. Not sure who you're going to play at this point. But are you gearing up now? You're gearing up right now for it, right now, aren't you?
Yeah, man. You know, it's basically, you know, win or go home, man. You know, it's rare. It's probably only a few people on our team who haven't even been in the playoffs. You know, so it's a totally different level. So everybody has to start getting their mind right now.
And you made the playoffs with the Jacksonville Jaguars. What is the difference between the playoffs and the regular season?
It's a totally different speed, man. It's three speeds during the season. It's the preseason, the regular season, and the playoffs. And the playoffs, you know, stakes are the highest that they can ever be. You know, you have to be on top of your game with everything. Not saying that you don't have to do that during the regular season, but it's just, you know, even that much more pressure on you. You know, everybody's watching every game. You know, all eyes on you at all times. So you just have to be that much more on your toes.
And Justin, hopefully you and the Detroit Lions will be on your toes this week against the Packers and moving forward into the playoffs. Justin, it was a pleasure talking to you, man. We wish you nothing but the best of luck against the Packers and nothing but the best of luck in the playoffs. Let's do this again.
Yes, sir. Thanks, man. I appreciate you for having me.
Take care. Justin Durant, linebacker for the Detroit Lions, and the Detroit Lions, again, they're in the playoffs. How much noise they can make in the playoffs is we'll have to see. We'll definitely have to see, but there's talent, especially on the offensive side of football, and I think there's talent throughout this whole roster. So we'll see what happens with the Lions moving forward, but again, if they can get that fifth seed and hopefully for them avoid the 49ers or the Saints, more so the Saints and the 49ers, I believe, and hopefully for them get into a game against possibly the Giants or Cowboys, they have a much better shot to make some noise in these playoffs, but we shall see moving forward. Let's bring in now Colts wide receiver Jared Faison. Jared, how are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Anytime.
And New Year's Eve is today, and you're excited about New Year's Eve?
Yeah, I mean, it's a new year, you know, new goals. 2012 will definitely be a big year.
And we're going to get to those goals later on. But, Jared, right now, a lot of talk has been made about Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck, and all that. As a player, are you getting kind of tired of hearing about this stuff?
Yeah. You know, I just kind of try not to pay any attention because, you know, it has nothing to do with me, really. So I just, you know, stay out of it. And I don't really even comment on it that much.
Right. And you look at it, I mean, you're very fortunate. You were with the Saints in Saints camp, so you're able to work with a quarterback like Drew Brees, and now you're in Indy with a quarterback like Peyton Manning. What have you learned being around these type of guys?
Well, man, just being around those type of guys, you know, just like their presence, it's definitely business, and just how they approach the game every day, you know, it's their livelihood, and that's why they're two of the best players in the game, just because of, you know, how they approach their game, how they approach the business every day, and you know, just how they conduct themselves, you know, and on and off the field, and you know, in the meeting rooms, and you know, they just do everything the right way.
And we talked about those two, but you have the opportunity to be around a guy like Reggie Wayne, a very good wide receiver in this league. How has Reggie helped you out?
Just by in every way you can imagine, everything from you know, running routes, releases, you know, staying healthy, taking care of my body. You know, I try and pick his brain, you know, every chance I get, because he's definitely played in the league for over 10 years, and you know, that's one of my goals. So he's one of the best guys to learn from.
And I look at the Indianapolis Colts, and I sense a team. Granted, the year has not been good, but I sense there's no quit in this team. Talk about that.
No, there's definitely a strong spiritual background here. You know, that's one thing I really love about this team and organization. You know, Coach Caldwell, you know, he's definitely a spiritual guy. And, you know, I like that everyone has, an amazing amount of faith, and it's a great group of guys. They stick together, and you know, that's why no one's never going to quit.
We're talking to Colts wide receiver Jarrett Faison, excuse me. And Jarrett, you were with the Saints in Saints camp. You were waived in August. What happened with the New Orleans Saints?
I actually was having a pretty good camp out there, but I got injured, tore my MCL, and I was going to miss some significant time. So, you know, they needed the roster spot, and that's pretty much what happened.
Right. And like we said, and at what point did you really become healthy again?
Probably about maybe like a week and a half to 2 weeks before I got picked up by the Colts.
Okay.
So I would say week eight or week nine.
Okay. And was that a tough time for you, kind of keeping yourself ready and keeping yourself motivated?
I wouldn't say it was tough because, you know, I knew exactly why I wasn't able to play football or why, you know, I wasn't on the team. So I just knew once I got healthy, I would have another opportunity. And, you know, I just had to make sure I was ready to make it happen.
And were you surprised by getting a call from the Colts? Or did you work out with any other teams?
Actually, I worked out with the Dolphins and with the Patriots before signing with Indy. You know, I wasn't surprised with him because I talked to him after my pro day and, you know, like some pre-draft stuff. But so, you know, it was definitely a blessing to get the call, though.
We're talking to Colts wide receiver Jarrett Faison. And right now, Jarrett, you are on the practice squad with the Colts. What do you feel like you have to do next season to get on an active roster, whether it's with the Colts or any other team in this league?
You know, as a young player that didn't get drafted, it definitely starts on special teams. So definitely find a way to crack a special teams lineup and, you know, just go out and produce every day and, you know, just show why you belong, you know, to play in this league every day and, you know, stay in the playbook and stay healthy.
And some people view the practice squad as, you know what, I'm not playing. But the practice squad to me, from the outside looking in, it's an opportunity for a young guy like yourself to be around the league and be around different players and kind of get yourself acclimated to being in the NFL.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like I said, I learn a lot, you know, every day. And, you know, going against, a good defense, you know, good DBs and just, you know, seeing different coverages and, you know, just seeing all type of things that you can learn from, you know, on a daily basis and also have a lot more time to grasp and understand the playbook, you know, because you don't have to worry about, you know, the game plan changing each week and, you know, that is because, you know, you're on the practice squad. So, it has its pros and cons.
And, Jarrett, Christmas just passed. What did Jarrett Faison get for Christmas?
What did I get for Christmas? I got a few T-shirts. I got some winter clothes. And I actually got a Tony Dungy book, Uncommon, I believe is the name of it.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't too much of an exciting Christmas.
And the clothes that you got, are you looking to take any of them back?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
And today, like we said, is New Year's Eve. Tomorrow is the start of 2012. Does Jarrett Faison have a New Year's resolution?
Yeah, I have to go to church more this coming year in 2012.
Okay.
And I would say that's my number one resolution.
And I think a lot of us could use that resolution as well. A lot of us could go to church a lot more often than some of us do. And is that what you're planning on? Is that how you're going to spend the New Year's tonight?
I definitely won't be out or anything. I don't know if I'm going to church. I got to find a church up here in Indy, but I'll figure something out to do pretty low-key.
Okay. And that's wise. It's very wise on your part.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's New Year's Eve. It's not that, you know, big of a deal to me, so.
And, Jarrett, where can fans connect with you?
I have a Twitter. My Twitter is @JFaison.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. I'm on there quite a bit. I tweet a little. But, yeah, that's pretty much my social media thing, or, you know, you can contact me on there.
fans, make sure you connect with Jared Faison and make sure you give him a message here or there. And Jared, it was a pleasure talking to you, man. We wish you nothing but the best of luck in 2012. Hope to see you on an active NFL roster next season, and I'm looking for big things out of you.
No problem. Thanks. Thanks for having me. I'll come back anytime.
And we would love to have you back anytime, Jared. Take care of yourself.
All right, you too.
Jared Faison, wide receiver for the Indianapolis Colts. It was a pleasure talking to him. And, you know, a lot of people, like I said earlier on, have been making a big deal out of this whole situation with Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck and what should we do here, what should we do there, Andrew Luck, should we go Peyton Manning, so on and so forth. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you look at the situation. The guys that are on that roster, the guys that are playing tomorrow for the Colts, the reality is they're fighting for their NFL lives. They're fighting for their jobs because there's always someone out there looking to take their jobs. So they're fighting for their jobs. They're definitely fighting for their jobs. So, and I guess in some respect, it could be a slap in the face to those guys and say, you know what? You guys need to just lay it down and let's get Andrew Luck. The reality is some of these Colts players and a lot of these Colts players may not even see Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck may not even be their quarterback if the Colts draft him. So, I mean, the thing is, those guys got to fight for their lives, their livelihood. Ultimately, they got to put food on their table, clothes on their backs, and clothes on the backs of their kids, wives, girlfriends, so on and so forth. They got to take care of themselves and each other and others. That's what they have to do. That's what they have to do. So to think that they would lay down just to get Andrew Luck, it's kind of ludicrous. Some could argue that that's something they should do, but the reality is I wouldn't. I mean, if I'm a player, my life is on the line, my livelihood, how I eat is on the line. And if I like steak and lobster, I'm going to fight to stay on the NFL roster because I want to eat steak and lobster. The reality is they have a job to do, and their job is always on the line. Their job is always on the line. Always on the line. The NFL stands for not for long. So there's always somebody looking to take your spot. There's always somebody looking to take your spot. So you got to continue to do what you have to do to keep your spot, to put a stranglehold on your spot. That's what you have to do. You got to eat. So the Colts are going to go out and try to keep eating. And so not to say they'll win tomorrow, but the reality is I don't think they'll lay down. Because, again, Jim Caldwell may not even be there to see Andrew Luck. So you got to do what you have to do to eat. And that means going out there and playing hard, playing tough. And if you're a Colts fan, or if you're not a Colts fan, ultimately you get a victory. But some, if you're a Colts fan, may be rooting for them to lose. So, I mean, that's a whole other story. But the reality is this. The Indianapolis Colts have a job to do. 53 guys fighting for their livelihood, fighting to eat, fighting to do what they have to do to put food on their table, clothes on their backs. That's what they have to do. And that means going out there and beating who they have to beat. And that's bottom line. Beating the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's what this is about for the Indianapolis Colts. The same goes for the St. Louis Rams. This is an opportunity now where, you know, this is film. People are seeing you, just seeing what you're doing. You can impress a lot of people. And to me, when you're in these type of games, in a lot of ways, it's almost like a preseason game from this perspective. Is there's film out there on you. And looking at that film, they're going to see what you can do and what you can't do. So this is an opportunity for you to shine. There's an opportunity to shine. So we'll see what happens with the Colts, and we'll see what happens with the Rams tomorrow in the National Football League. And I enjoy. Tomorrow's going to be big. Tomorrow's going to be big in the National Football League, and we talked about it earlier. We're going to talk about it some more. And I talked about the Giants and Cowboys earlier this week, and as of right now, Tony Romo has been practicing with a bandage on his right hand. But you look at it. You look at Tony Romo and the Dallas Cowboys. You look at this team. This game means a lot to Tony Romo, means a lot to Jason Garrett. And Jerry Jones has already come out and said even if the Cowboys lose, Jason Garrett's job is safe and secure. But you look at Tony Romo, again, this guy has a lot to prove. A lot of people still doubt him, even though he's putting up big-time numbers this year, even though he's having a good year. He's having a very good year. But a lot of people are doubting this guy. A lot of people have seen some of the things that he's done earlier in the year against the Lions, earlier in the year against the Jets, and even in the playoffs, we go back always. You see, always see the video of him dropping a snap against the Seattle Seahawks then. And he's had some issues in December throughout the course of his career. But the reality is Tony Romo's having a good year for the Dallas Cowboys. He's having a good year. 29 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. That's good numbers. That's very good numbers. That's elite quarterback-type numbers. And Tony Romo's putting up big-time numbers, close to 4,000 yards passing, and he probably will go over that tomorrow. But he's putting up some decent numbers. And so the Dallas Cowboys, to me, you look at the Giants, look at the Cowboys, I think the Cowboys are playing the better football at this point. Both of these defenses, to me, are a little shaky. They are a little shaky. But I said this before. I said this Wednesday. You look at it. Week 14, these two teams played. And now they're playing again in Week 17. So you look at it this way. It's very hard to beat any team two times in 1 year. But I think it's going to be even harder for the Giants to beat the Cowboys twice in this short span. This is a very short time frame. So it's going to be hard, in my mind, for the Cowboys to lose twice to the Giants and for the Giants to beat the Cowboys twice because of that. Again, a small window here. So, to me, that benefits the Cowboys. That benefits the Cowboys. And I think you look at that, you look at Tony Romo and how he's playing, I think he's going to play very well in this game. And you look at the Cowboys in terms of their team and look how the Giants have been playing. You know, the Giants won last week, but Eli Manning did not put up big-time numbers last week. I mean, I believe it was 9 for 27 in that particular ball game, 225 yards and a touchdown. And then you talk about the week before against the Redskins where he was awful. So the past 2 weeks, Eli Manning really has not been playing elite quarterback-type football and has not really been playing good football in general. I mean, he's really not. So you look at it, and I think putting this all together, teams playing in such a short time frame, Giants beating a team twice in one season, how these two teams are playing, Eli Manning's performance the last couple weeks, I think you put that all together, and you say to yourself, Tony Romo having a lot to prove. You put that all together. You put it in that pot. You mix it up a little bit like gumbo. And you make a decision. And you determine to me that, I determine that the Dallas Cowboys, to me, have the edge and to me will win this game tomorrow. They are the better football team in my mind. I look at these two teams, and I think the Cowboys are the better team. And I think it will show tomorrow at MetLife Stadium, which was supposed to be JetLife Stadium, but we all know what happened a week ago when the Giants and Jets met. So you look at it, and I say to myself, and I look at it, and I put all those, like I said, I put it all in the pot. I stirred it up, and I tasted the soup. And to me, the soup tastes like a Cowboys victory tomorrow at MetLife Stadium. And so with that being said, the Cowboys will win the NFC East. And if that happens, does Tom Coughlin go? A guy who's had his issues in December. Does Coughlin go? Do the Giants move on from Tom Coughlin? Or do you give him another year? And I looked at the Giants early on. I mean, I thought this was a team that would take a step back. I thought with losing Terrell Thomas and losing Steve Smith, losing Kevin Boss, and Steve Smith played like Steve Stiff this year for the Eagles, but and losing those guys, Umiura being out for an extended period of time, Justin Tuck struggling with injuries throughout the course of this season, Ahmad Bradshaw struggling with injuries throughout the course of this season, I looked at all those things and I said to myself that the Giants would take a step back. But they didn't. I mean, they didn't take a step back per se, but they're right here with an opportunity to win the NFC East. And I said this a couple days ago. The best team in the NFC East, unfortunately, will be playing out the string against the Washington Redskins. The most talented team in the NFC East, unfortunately, for me, will be playing out the string against the Washington Redskins. And that is the Philadelphia Eagles. That is the Philadelphia Eagles. They will be playing out the string against the Washington Redskins. And I said it on Wednesday, and I'll repeat myself again. Those are things that happen when you turn the ball over the way they have, when you lose fourth quarter leads the way they have. Those are the things that happen. Those things happen when you do those type of things, when you turn the ball over an ungodly amount. When you don't hold fourth quarter leads, five times to be exact, you get what you get. You get 7-8, and you get playing out the string. That's what you get when you do those type of things. That's what you get. Fair or unfair, fortunately or unfortunately, that's what you get. That's what you get. And speaking of a team and going back to some of these stories and big-time sports stories in 2011, how about the St. Louis Cardinals, a team, speaking of a team that doesn't quit and made comebacks and did what they had to do to win the championship in baseball, the San Francisco St. Louis Cardinals, I mean, this was a team that you look at it, they were left for dead. Left for dead, and out of nowhere, they came back. And it seemed like throughout the course of the year, they were left for dead. There were points throughout that year where you can just stick a fork in them. And every time you were in the process of sticking that fork in them, they would just move away. They would move away. And they would move away. And ultimately, they moved and kept moving. Ultimately, they moved to winning the wild card spot in the National League. And then you figure, you know what, let me stick another fork in them because they're going to be playing the Phillies with Hamels, Holiday, and Oswalt, and Cliff Lee. So they're going to be facing a pitching staff that is just off the charts. So I look at that series, and then during that series, the Phillies get off to Phillies were leading the series 2-1. At that point, I was sticking my fork out again. And I was in the process of sticking my fork into the St. Louis Cardinals. But they moved. They moved again. They win game 4. And they keep on moving and win game 5 in Philadelphia and beat Roy Halladay in a fifth and deciding game. 1-0. And then you keep moving on. You keep moving on. And then they get by the Brewers. And then you go to the World Series, Game 6, down to their last out on a few occasions. You were ready to pull that fork out and start sticking it into those guys. But guess what? They moved. They kept moving. They kept moving. They kept moving. And guess what? They moved themselves into Game 7, and they go into Game 7, dominate Game 7, and ultimately they win the World Series. Unbelievable. And I called them the St. Louis Cockroaches. For the simple fact is, if there was a nuclear bomb, the St. Louis Cardinals / Cockroaches would survive. Because they survived everything throughout the course of this season. They survived everything. Injuries, they survived it. Being down the last outs, they survived it. They survived it. And they're going to have to survive this year without Albert Pujols, as he signed with the Anaheim Angels. The Los Angeles Angels, excuse me. So, you look at that. Pujols is in Los Angeles, but the Cardinals, man, they came out of absolutely nowhere. And they battled, they fought, they stuck around, and ultimately they won the World Series and now are your World Series champions. Give the St. Louis Cardinals a lot of credit. Give Tony La Russa a lot of credit. Give all those guys a lot of credit. Give them a lot of credit. Because they battled, they fought, and ultimately they got what they needed, and that was an MLB title. Tony La Russa retires this year, and he retired on top. He is he's a Hall of Fame manager, and he managed the heck out of this ball club. He managed the heck out of this ball club. He managed the heck out of this ball club and did a great job with this ball club. A great job. And so give them, the St. Louis Cardinals, a whole lot of credit. And one of the stories of 2011 is the city of Philadelphia. I mean, I look at the city of Philadelphia and I say this. The Eagles, the Dream Team Eagles, and then the Phillies. These were two franchises that could arguably, or many had them as favorites, to win championships. It didn't happen. The Phillies, disappointed, losing to the St. Louis Cardinals, a team that they were much better than. They lose to the St. Louis Cardinals. And then, you look at it, an Eagle team that woefully underachieved this season. An Eagle team that, in many ways, were very talented, were a team that many thought would win the Super Bowl. But it didn't happen for them either. And just like Detroit, and is a championship-starved city, a winning-starved city, a team that is a city that's desperate for a winner, Philadelphia is on some level, too. Granted, the Phillies did win it back in 2008. But it seems like, being a Philly fan, Philadelphia fan my whole life, it seems like whatever bad can happen has happened. And I'm granted, we're not Cleveland. We're not Cleveland, but we're not that great either, in terms of some of this bad stuff that just tends to happen. Snake bitten. We've been snake bitten in a lot of ways. And those snake bites hurt. Those snake bites truly, truly hurt. But that's just life as a Philadelphia fan. And all the things that we talked about with the Eagles, the Dream Team Eagles, and all the things that we talked about with the Phillies, and the Four Aces, all those things went up in flames. And ultimately, the Phillies and the Eagles disappointed us. Disappointed us as Philly fans, myself included. They disappointed us. But it is life, and life does move on. But doesn't mean it does not hurt. It truly, truly, truly hurts. Hurts. Hurts bad. But again, it is life. And that's what happens in life sometimes, and fair or unfair, fortunately or unfortunately, it is what it is. Let's bring in now actor Marty York. Marty, how are you, sir?
How you doing today, sir?
I'm doing very well. Pleasure talking to you.
Yes, yes. I just came in. I didn't speak to anybody. I didn't know I was on right now.
Oh, yeah, you're on. You're on.
Oh, okay. How's it going?
And, Marty, you look at it, your claim to fame is your role as Yeager in the hit movie The Sandlot. What did that role do for your career?
It did a lot. I pretty much was acting constantly until I was about 17. And then I got in a pretty bad car accident when I was 17. It kind of took me out of the game for, I would say, a couple years. But after that movie, I mean, I was on a lot of different TV shows, Saved by the Bell, Boy Meets World, Sliders, Wings. So it kind of escalated. It kind of elevated my career to the next level.
And how did you get that role?
I auditioned for the role when I was about 13 years old. I went to an open casting call. I had an agent. And they auditioned me for the role of Yeah Yeah. I think there was about probably 100 other kids there that looked just like me. And they really liked me. They brought me back for a second callback. They narrowed the kids down a little bit. Then they brought me back for a third callback. And then finally it was like between me and two other kids, and I ended up landing the role. So it was a pretty long process to actually get the role, Yeah Yeah.
And I guess those 100 or so kids couldn't do it the way you could.
Oh, no, the role was a small, tan, little, skinny hyper kid. So basically my mom gave me a bunch of Hershey's chocolate bars before I went in. And kind of got me all jacked up and everything, and I went and I just blew them away.
And mama always knows best.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
do you still get recognized for that today, that role?
I look a lot different than I used to when I was a kid. I started working out, started going to the gym. I wanted to be a firefighter for a little bit after my acting career as a child. But the car accident kind of prohibited that. I don't really get recognized anymore. I do a lot of red carpet events, and that's pretty much how people recognize me. But if you saw me on the street, you wouldn't know I was Yeah Yeah.
Well, okay. And you referenced the car accident. You talked about it earlier. Talk about that car accident. How long did it really take you to get back on your feet and back to yourself?
It took me, I would say, about a year just to get actually even start walking again. I broke both my legs from the waist down, had a minor concussion, shattered femur, broken ankle. Both my legs were just completely, the doctors basically said you're not going to be able to walk again. It was a 60-mile-an-hour head-on collision.
Wow.
And it took me about 3 months in the hospital to finally actually get to even stand up again. I couldn't even stand up. But it took me, I would say, about a year to almost, fully get back to where I was. And then as I was in the hospital, I started working out and doing physical therapy. And I started, working my upper body. And that's when I started getting bigger.
We're talking to actor Marty York. And Marty was Yeah Yeah on the hit movie The Sandlot. And Marty, there has been some talk about a possible Sandlot reunion. Talk about that.
I've heard a couple different things about it, but there's a theater in downtown L.A. They might do a reunion with all of us, and do a screening of The Sandlot again. As far as like a another Sandlot movie goes, I've gotten scripts for them, but as of right now, there's nothing in the works that I know of.
Okay, okay.
But there's
and
some
that's
pretty good ideas.
Go ahead.
There's some pretty good ideas about it. Bringing the whole cast back together would be an awesome thing. You know,
right.
We got, you know, Mike Vitar back, Benny the Jet, you know, Tom Guiry, and got all those guys back again.
And so you would really, really be open to something like this?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And what else? Go ahead. And what else does Marty York have in the works right now?
Right now, basically, I did a couple of independent films. I just did a Bosch Power Tool commercial. It plays after a lot of the football games, so you might have caught it. It's
okay.
For the Multi-X. It's a new tool they have. And so
okay.
you might have seen that after some football games. I got a little quick shot in there.
All right.
And just I'm doing a lot of red carpet events for charities now. I just did one for autism. I did one for breast cancer. And I'm just trying to do good right now, you know, and make good with God, and we'll see what happens.
Right. And
anybody that wants to find out more information about me, you can friend request me on Facebook, Marty York. Don't have a Twitter account yet, but working on that.
Okay.
So that's in the works.
You got to get that Twitter account going. You got to get that going.
Yeah, I didn't even know what Twitter was until about 2 weeks ago. So I was like, what's the difference between Twitter and Facebook? Because I thought it was like the same thing.
I guess Twitter, I guess, is more status-driven, I guess, where you're at, what you're doing.
That's what I heard.
Take on it.
Yeah, a lot of actors have that, yeah.
Right.
And looking
at it now, Christmas just passed. What did Marty York get for Christmas?
To be honest, I got a lot of socks.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't get a whole lot of cool stuff, but I guess as you get older, you get less and less cool stuff. But you know, at least my feet will be warm for next year. I got to hang out with the family, and that was cool, you know.
Right.
So
did you get any gift receipts for those socks?
I think I can return them to Walmart. I'm pretty sure I can, but I think I'll keep the socks. You always need socks, right? So.
And New Year's is tomorrow. What?
That's right.
You got any type of resolutions out there?
Just stay focused. Stay focused on the goals. Stay focused on what I'm trying to accomplish in the business. Just get back out there. Get my face back out there. The red carpet events are great. I met a lot of great people. Did a TMZ interview a couple weeks ago, so that was cool. Just getting my face back out there and reinventing myself. Obviously, I'm not a kid anymore. I'm an adult now. But, you know, The Sandlot is something that I think that, you know, even to this day on Facebook, I still get people, you know, like commenting how they pass it down to their children and their children watch it and they love it. And I think it's a movie that will just never die in the hearts of fans.
And looking at it for you, you trying to reinvent yourself. In some respect, being a child actor, is it sometimes a gift and a curse as you get older?
It is a gift and a curse because it's a very hard industry to make it in the first place, especially as a child. But when you come back as an adult, it's even harder. And especially now with all the reality TV and everything else they got going on, it's a tough business. But I've basically been, you know, going out on a lot of different roles. I have a different look now. So I've been doing a lot of Jersey Shore stuff, believe it or not, Jersey Shore
right.
kind of roles and, you know, stuff for cops and firefighters and stuff like that because I got that look now. So I'm just going 100% full speed ahead. New Year's is coming up. 2012 is going to be Marty York's year.
Right. And I believe that 2012 will be your year as well.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
And, you know, stay positive, keep your head up, and keep doing what you're doing, man. And great things should happen for Marty York in 2012.
That's right. That's right. And I will be in Hollywood partying tonight. So
not too much partying.
Not too much. Not too much. But
you gotta stay focused. You gotta stay focused.
I'll stay focused on January 1st.
And we see childhood actors and everything. Did you feel like that your childhood was kind of taken away from you on some level?
I never really felt my childhood was taken away from me. I mean, I did spend a lot of time going to auditions and stuff like that, but you know, I had a different childhood. You know, most kids were playing with their friends, and I was you know, doing publicity for movies and TV shows and stuff like that. And I think you get a false sense of what the world is when you grow up in that kind of world. But you know, I got out of the business for a couple of years. I got out of the business for about 5 or 6 years, and you know, started working regular jobs, working coffee shops, and you know, that then you realize, okay, this is the hustle of the everyday hustle.
Right.
And so,
definitely.
You know, I know what it is to work hard. You know, I know what it is to work hard, definitely. But you know, acting is where my heart's at.
Right.
And it's something that definitely, like, I don't want to give up.
Right.
I know a lot of the guys in the Sandlot have different jobs now, and that's their thing. I mean, I'm going for the acting still, and I'm not going to give that up.
And how often do you watch The Sandlot, if at all?
I don't really watch it anymore. You know, sometimes it's on TV. It was on AMC last week, and I'll get like 20 people calling me, "Hey, Sandlot's on," and I'll flip through the channel and look at it and smile, and then you know, flip back to UFC or whatever I was watching. But
right.
I've seen it like a million times, and I don't really pop in the DVD and watch Sandlot anymore. But
And were you a big baseball fan?
Oh yeah, when I was a kid, I was more of a baseball fan than I am now. I'm definitely football now. Steelers, love the Steelers, and you know, basketball, Lakers, of course. Got to see my Lakers play. they weren't doing too good first couple games, but they're starting to come back now. So
a little bit, playing some decent basketball.
Oh yeah. I think they're gonna come back. I think we're gonna make a comeback.
And what about your Steelers?
What was that?
What about your Steelers? You see your Steelers getting to the Super Bowl?
I don't know about this year, but I'm hoping they do.
Okay.
I'm more going for the Lakers. That's my thing. That's my team.
Okay. All right. And you look at the Lakers, Lamar Odom trade, I mean, Kobe wasn't too happy with it. I mean, I'm not a Lakers fan myself, but just looking at it, I'm not really a big fan of that trade as well. But do you still feel like the Lakers will get back to the NBA Finals the way they're presently constructed?
I think they'll make it back. I think they'll make it back. Obviously, you know, the Odom trade, I didn't like that, but I'm not a huge fan of Paul Gasol.
Okay. You're not a big fan?
I'm not a big fan of Gasol.
Okay.
I think they should have kept Odom, but we got Bynum coming back actually today, right?
He should be back four games. Is there a fourth game today? I know he had a four-game suspension. I think he is coming back today.
Yeah, Bynum's back today. I think once we get Bynum back, I think we're going to take it.
And so, that's going to be big for you guys, getting Bynum. You don't want Dwight Howard?
That would be cool, but I'm cool with Bynum coming back. I think they'll be on a roll once he comes back, and you know, they're already starting to come back anyway. So
yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I like out west. I like the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think they're a team that has surpassed the Lakers on. Kevin Durant's a better player. Russell Westbrook is a star. I think they're a team that's going to win the West, but ultimately, all those teams, whoever comes out the West, is going to lose to the Miami Heat anyway.
Yeah, Oh, you think? Okay.
We'll see.
I'm just going for the Lakers all the way. I've been a Lakers fan since I was 5 years old, watching Magic play with my dad, and I follow them to this day. So.
Very cool. Very cool. And Marty, again, you said you had a Facebook page. Is the Facebook name Marty York? Just put it out there again for the fans so they know where to connect with you.
Yeah, just go to Facebook Marty York.
Okay. So, fans, make sure you Facebook Marty York. He'll friend you back, and you guys can connect, and he can connect with the fans. And this man is poised to make a big-time comeback in 2012, and we're going to support him here, and we wish you nothing but the best of luck in 2012, Marty.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. And
make it happen.
Come on anytime. Once I make that comeback, I definitely will come back on, or come back on before then, whatever.
Definitely. We'll have you back, and we'll talk about the comeback. We'll talk about you being back on top again.
That's right, brother.
Take care, Marty. Happy New Year.
Right,
enjoy yourself. Don't enjoy yourself too much. Not too much.
I'll try not to drink too much tonight.
Okay, appreciate it.
All right, man. Have a good one.
All right. Marty York, yeah, from the Sandlot. And Marty is poised to make a big comeback in 2012. We wish Marty nothing but the best of luck in 2012. I mean, he's poised to make that comeback, and we'll see if he can do it. But again, if you put it out there, if you speak it, if you believe it, you can achieve it. And that's what Marty York is looking to do in 2012. And that's what I'm looking to do in 2012. 2011 has been a great year for us, for our show, Go For It. We had a lot of great stars, a lot of great guests, and a lot of great times in 2012. It has been enjoyable bringing this show to you throughout 2011. 2011 has been a great year, but 2012 hopefully will be much better for myself and everybody out there listening. 2012 is upon us. Some believe that we won't get past 2012, but I don't agree with that. But 2012 is upon us. And another opportunity for all of us to not only be good, but hopefully to be great. Greatness is something that we can all achieve if we put our mind to it, and if we think positively and put positive things out there and say you can do this and say you can do that, instead of saying that you can't do this and saying you can't do that. Stay positive. Stay focused. Let's get everything going, because 2012 is going to be a big year for us. Here I go for it, and I think for you all that are out there, just proclaim it, just believe it, and you can achieve it. Believe and achieve is what we're about here. Go for it, and believe and achieve is what you should be about as well in your own lives. Again, it was a pleasure talking sports and having fun with you in 2011, and we look forward to talking more sports and having more fun with you in 2012. 2012 is just around the corner. What time is it now on the East Coast? About 3 o'clock, approaching 3 o'clock on the East Coast. So you got to let in another 9 hours in 2011. So anything you need to clean up in 2011, make sure you do. Clean up the house, clean your clothes, get all cleaned up, get everything clean for 2011. Make sure you're clean for 2011 and come in 2012 nice and clean and ready to take over the world in 2012. 2012 is upon us, folks. Do the best you can. Achieve what you can achieve and make it happen. Make it happen. That's what I plan to do. Make it happen in 2012. 2012 is our year, everybody. 2012 is approaching and it is upon us. We want to thank Justin Durant of the Detroit Lions. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at JDurant52. Also, we want to thank Marty York, actor from The Sandlot, and Marty is poised to make a big comeback in 2012. Make sure you go to Facebook, friend him. He'll friend you back. And again, it's Marty York. Also, we want to thank Jared Faison for joining us. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at JFaison. And also, Matt Moneymaker of Animal Planet's Finding Bigfoot, which airs on Animal Planet, 10 o'clock Eastern, 9 o'clock Pacific, on Animal Planet each and every Sunday. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant, where you can listen to this show and other great shows. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Go4Kent. For everybody, it was a pleasure bringing it to you. 2011 is done. 2012 is upon us. Take care. See you later.